a warning for listeners. We're going to be talking about child exploitation. For the next half hour, the discussion may not be suitable for children. The spread of child sexual abuse images online was called an epidemic over a decade ago. Today, the problem has only gotten worse. The internet has made sharing those images and videos easier than before, and our next guest says that's been accompanied by failures on the part of big technology companies and regulators in the federal government to take meaningful steps to stop it. Michael Keller is a reporter and data journalist for the New York Times investigative team. He co-reported the piece headlined, "The Internet is Overrun with Images of Child Sexual Abuse. What Went Wrong?" Michael, thanks for being with us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I had no idea the scope of what's going on here. Can you give us a sense of how big this problem is today?
Yeah, sure thing. This was surprising for us also to learn over the course of this investigation. We found that really over the last 20 years, in the late 90s, when this started to be recorded more diligently, there were about 3,000 reports of images of explicit images of children circulating online. About 10 years after that, there were about 200,000. And then last year, there were nearly 17 million reports, including about 70 million images and videos inside in those reports. So really a growth that at times doubles year to year. And over the past 20 years, as you said, 10 years ago, it was called an epidemic. And since then, it's really only increased.
I think if people hear the phrase child pornography, it sounds bad. And from what you reported on, things are worse than that image even conjures up. Without getting too graphic, can you give us a sense of what's out there?
Yeah, I think when most people hear that term, they think of maybe young teenagers posing erotically. And I think while that would still clearly be illegal, what we learned is that it's much worse. It's often the graphic depiction of the rape of infants and toddlers, children even as young as that, which is extremely surprising. And that's not even the edge cases. That's not the small number. We learned that many local law enforcement and even the FBI, while they're always investigating cases where there's imminent harm to a child, they often have to prioritize the tips they get to those just concerning infants and toddlers. They have so many coming in, and in many cases, not enough resources to handle the volume.
What led you into this investigation initially?
We originally got a tip from a reader, actually. They wrote us saying that they inadvertently stumbled across explicit images of children when they were using Microsoft's Bing search engine, which was pretty surprising. They were searching for unrelated terms, and the search engine itself started suggesting these other terms. And if you clicked on that, it led you down kind of one of these rabbit holes and started returning images of naked children. They wrote to us extremely concerned. We looked into it and found that it checked out. We reported it to the FBI immediately and then started our own investigation. Because it is illegal to even look at these images, and so we advise people don't try and go looking yourself. We still wanted to investigate further. What we ended up doing was we wrote a computer program that could replicate that tipster's search without us actually being at the computer and seeing the results. It could then block the images that came back and compare the URL of the image, so where the web address was without actually seeing it, used a technology that actually Microsoft itself developed that could tell you if that image is a previously identified one. And to our surprise, we actually found that 75 images matched known examples of child sexual abuse material on Microsoft's servers using Microsoft's own software to detect it, really raising questions about the efforts that even the companies that are developing tools to capture this material, to detect it, whether they're using their own tools. The company ended up telling us that it was a bug that those images slipped through. When we tried it then a couple weeks later, we found even more. So it was concerning and part of a larger investigation we did that found a number of policy gaps and decisions that companies took that ultimately lead to many of these images slipping through.
Michael Keller is with us from the New York Times investigative team, talking about an investigation into images and videos of child sexual abuse all over the internet. Before we dig into some of the things that went wrong along the way at a lot of different levels, Michael, there's new news this week, efforts in Congress, based in large part on your reporting. What are we seeing?
Yeah, there were two measures this week, and they're one of them is a part of a larger push in Congress to try and address this issue. One was a set of voluntary guidelines that the Department of Justice, in conjunction with four foreign governments, put out, as well as industry. They essentially worked together to come up with a set of voluntary guidelines they could all agree to for companies to better police and detect this material on their platforms. The second one is a bill that was introduced by Senators Lindsey Graham of South Carolina and Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut, a bipartisan bill that would essentially increase the accountability for technology companies. It would expose them to civil liability if they didn't follow forthcoming guidelines. So it will set up a group that will work to create a series of best practices that the industry should adopt. And for companies that don't adopt them, they could expose themselves to some serious liability, which is a pretty extraordinary step and something that for over 20 years, the internet companies have been free from such lawsuits.
There was funding given years ago after this was first found to be an epidemic, even though it was at much lower levels. What happened with that federal funding that was supposed to lead efforts to crack down on these kind of images and videos?
In 2008, there was a landmark bill that was passed that, as you said, when this was called an epidemic, it spurred a lot of action in Washington. And one of the results was a dedicated yearly stream of revenue for investigators that are looking into this problem. The trouble is that even though the numbers seem to double every year in terms of how many images are found, the funding has not kept pace. And so you still only see about $30 million a year allocated to local investigators. And since our reporting, there's been recent calls to increase that. And so that will certainly be something interesting to watch. One of the other big parts of that bill was the Department of Justice was supposed to come out with reports every 2 years, essentially national strategy reports, trying to devise a way to tackle the problem, to help investigators say, how can you better find the offenders that are at risk of actually harming a child? What is the scope of it? How many children are involved? How many images are out there? And unfortunately, only two of those reports have ever been published in 10 years, even though they're supposed to have been coming out every other year. So that's certainly concerning. When we spoke with one of the authors of the bill, Congresswoman W. Wasserman Schultz, she has been trying to get answers from the Department of Justice about why those reports have not been coming out more frequently, and so far has not gotten an answer.
Let's look at the role of the technology companies themselves. One case in Wisconsin you report, I think it was Tumblr, I can't remember for sure, that had reported images like this to the police, but tipped off their user had posted their image, you have been referred to police investigation, giving them time to delete files. What can you talk about the sort of things we see from the companies themselves?
Yeah, one of the issues around that is how these companies work with investigators. And so there's actually another bill that was been introduced in both the House and the Senate. Representative Anthony Gonzalez of Ohio in the House spearheaded it, that would actually increase the amount of time for a company to retain evidence. So if they find a user has posted child sexual abuse material, they're supposed to notify the authorities and take it down and then hold on to it so that when law enforcement comes, they have evidence and they can try and track down who it is. We found in some cases, as you mentioned in that scenario, they are notifying the user and that leads to a loss of evidence. Sometimes because law enforcement they're so overwhelmed, it takes them longer than 90 days. And so by the time they come back to the company says, we don't actually have any of this data. And so what that bill would do is it would double the amount of time a company has to hold on to it to try and help law enforcement as they investigate these crimes. The other thing that we found is that many technology companies such as Google Drive or Dropbox, these cloud storage companies, don't scan every file that is uploaded to them. They may only do it under certain circumstances or in certain cases. And so we reviewed, I think, nearly 10,000 pages of court documents. And what you'd often see is they may get a tip from a company based on, you know, one file that happened to be scanned. And then when investigators go in and look further, they'll actually find thousands. And in some cases, it may actually lead them to an active, ongoing abuse of a child. So when we speak with experts in the technology field, they say, you know, there is a lot being found, certainly, since you see that in the reporting numbers, but that really is just the tip of the iceberg, and that if these companies increase their detection efforts, you'd be seeing a whole lot more.
We're picking up our conversation with Michael Keller of the New York Times. We're talking about his investigation into a huge rise in the number of photos and videos of child exploitation and abuse being shared online. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you've worked in law enforcement or with victims or child protection, have you encountered these issues yourself or in your own family? Or do you have questions for our guest? You can join in at 800-642-1234. 1234. We'll go to your calls now. Kathy is with us in Appleton. Kathy, hello.
Howdy. My question has to do with what are we doing as a society or as a culture that is producing so many perpetrators? You know, for years we focused a lot, which needed to be, on victims. And so we understand the impact of sexual abuse on victims. But I find we haven't really focused on the perpetrators and what is driving all this behavior.
Kathy, thanks for the call. That's a huge question. Michael, from your investigations, what do we know about the perpetrators and the rings, the communities, in a way, of people sharing these images and videos?
It's a really good question. And it's something that was on our minds a lot in this investigation. Whenever you see numbers rising so much, you always ask yourself, is this because we're getting better at detecting it? Is it because there's new behavior happening? And I think in this case, it's a little bit of both. You have, it's never been easier to take a picture or a video and share it since you have smartphones. But I think the other dynamic that's at play here is also, if you are on the offender side, you now have a community of people that you can go online. Let's say you're someone who has a sexual interest in children. Before the internet, you didn't have anyone to talk to about that. Now you can go online and find people who will tell you that's totally normal. Here's other images that I have. Here's an app that you can use to talk to kids. Here's an app you can use to share images and videos with us. And encourage the behavior, which is certainly very concerning, since obviously it's not normal or appropriate to have sexual interest in children. But similar to how, you know, radicalization in other areas happens, people often say that this is something that now is leading to more offenders.
I want to talk a little more about the impact on victims, not just the initial instances of abuse now, but these images and videos being online theoretically forever. I want to listen to a family anonymously you talked to. They've been trying to get images of their daughter taken down from the internet.
What if it was your daughter?
Yeah, you know, put yourself in that kid's shoes.
What if you were the person they're looking at the rest of your life? If we could tell her this happened instead of this is happening, yeah, the world would be a lot better off. She'll be a lot better off.
What ability do victims and their families have to try to get these things off the internet? It sounds almost impossible.
We definitely heard a lot of frustration from the families of victims and even from some of the victims themselves. They feel that even though the abuse happened in some case 10 years ago, the idea that people are still looking at images of the event, essentially one of the worst moments, if not the worst moment in your entire life, and getting pleasure out of that is a big impediment to them moving forward with their life. They feel that sometimes people think it's just pictures, but it's really so much more than that. As one person, a woman who at age 11 had been filmed being sexually assaulted by her father, who's now an adult, she said, "You're just trying to feel okay and not let something like this define your whole life. But the thing with the pictures," she said, "is that's what keeps this alive." They often expressed feelings of guilt that they have, which is it's obviously not their fault, but they feel like images of them can be used to coerce other children. If an offender goes online and starts talking to a child and says, "Oh, it's totally normal for adults and children to have a sexual relationship," which is obviously not true, but they can say, "Here's a photo of it, and this is, you know, what we should do. We should meet in person." So it's both incredibly harmful to the person in the photo, but also to other children who may be brought into this abuse as a result of that. One of the big fears we heard over and over again was people are so concerned about being recognized in real life from the photos. It really follows them into adulthood.
Let's bring out another caller now. Laura is with us in Superior. Laura, hello.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I appreciate you bringing and highlighting this issue. I'm a forensic interviewer at a child advocacy center in Duluth, Minnesota, and we just don't see the resources, even though we have amazing trained staff in our ICAC unit, Internet Crimes Against Children. There's no way they can go through hundreds of thousands of images. It's so backlogged that we worry about the hands-on offenses, and interviewing children that are alleged victims of internet crimes is also a whole nother ball of wax. And it's very challenging to get these children to disclose because of the exact reasons the researcher and person from the New York Times is just talking about.
Laura, thanks for the call. Michael, that's in Duluth, and that's not just in Duluth. The system is overwhelmed at the national level, locally, everywhere, right?
Right. And I think as the caller rightly pointed out, the investigators, they're called Internet Crimes Against Children Units, they have so many reports and tips coming in that they told us they often don't have the time to prioritize undercover or what they call proactive investigations. This is where they may pose either as a child and find an offender that wants to meet that child in real life, or they may pose as an adult looking for other like-minded individuals. And they say that those are extremely fruitful investigations, and they wish they had more time to prioritize them, but they just simply don't in many instances.
Thanks for that call. Michael, in our last couple of minutes, this is a very distressing story, but you've seen a lot of response from Congress and elsewhere that is maybe encouraging that people are starting to take this seriously. Give us some of the bright spots you're seeing since your reporting came out and how people are responding.
We've seen some companies increase their detection efforts. One instance, Snap is now looking into scanning for videos in addition to images. We've seen a big international response among groups that are looking to fund more of this work and more detection efforts. I think some of the bills that we mentioned that are looking to increase the funding in the U.S. are encouraging. And even though this is a really global problem, pretty much any internet platform anywhere around the world is going to have people coming to it to try and share this imagery, or if there are children on the platform, to talk to children on the platform. The U.S. really serves as in a unique role because of all of the Silicon Valley giants that are, you know, U.S. companies. So I think it is encouraging that now Congress is looking at, all right, what can we do at the Department of Justice to step up enforcement of the existing laws? What can we do to increase funding for the local investigators? And then these two efforts to try and draw up guidelines or best practices that the technology sector can deploy a high tide rises all boats. So I think some people are encouraged by that. There are some other groups, such as privacy advocates, who worry that increased scanning or detection raises specters of more surveillance. And I think those are definitely justified concerns and worth an interesting debate and discussion. And so that's been a really interesting conversation to watch happen.
Michael, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Michael Keller from the New York Times investigative team. He was with us today to talk about his investigation into images and videos of child sex abuse on the internet. You can find his reporting along with tips to protect children from online predators. We've got linked on our website, wpr.org/centraltime.